All right, there you go, 7:38, and Bill Flores joins us from D.C. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Scott. It's great to be on WTAW again.
Glad to have you here. Now, I want to talk about the continuing resolution in a minute, but probably the biggest thing is let's talk about the layers where the United States is going to be affected by the disaster in Japan. There are any number of them. I guess let's start, first of all, with what you see as the economic impact on the United States because of it.
Well, Japan is one of our largest trading partners, and their economic activity is temporarily slowed down while they assess how bad the damage was. I think that's going to impact us in terms of our trade activity with them. When you have lower trade activity, you have lower economic activity here domestically. Also, one of the things that worries me a lot is Japan is a large holder of our U.S. Federal debt, and they may need to start cashing in those bonds and treasury notes in order to finance the rebuilding of their country. And that could put upward pressure on our interest rates, particularly at the federal level, and then that will ripple through the rest of the economy. That's troublesome to me. Short term, I think it's ease the pressure on oil prices, but I do believe that's only short term because as they begin the rebuilding process, that's going to use a lot of energy, so it could wind up being exacerbating our energy price issues that we have today.
I guess some of the things that, and again, so folks heard, we may be seeing some higher interest rates coming up because, again, Japan owns so much of our debt here in America. Now let's talk about it from a consumer standpoint. A lot of American dollars go over for consumables that are manufactured in Japan. Electronics, first thing that comes to mind. So I guess we could possibly start seeing price increases all across the board here in the United States because of that.
Absolutely, Scott, you're exactly right. Because for instance, flat panel manufacturers and chip manufacturers, they're big groupings of those in Japan, and with their transportation infrastructure under some stress, and they don't have as much electricity as they used to because of the problems with their nuclear power plants, that could ripple through to our economy with less availability of consumer goods and higher prices.
Now let's talk about nuclear for just a minute. I think that it's been pretty clear that the way that the Japanese have built their reactors are very different than, for instance, the way Chernobyl was done, and much closer to the way that we build them in the United States. But do you see that this is going to give those anti-nuclear people a leg to stand on because of the problem with the reactors?
Well, the anti-nuclear crowd is going to find any limb to stand on that they can. And my gut tells me that that is the same as yours, and that is that they will try to use this as an example to not expand our nuclear footprint in this country. I will tell you, from what I've seen, and I've had a couple of briefings on this so far, our standards for nuclear power plant construction with respect to building them in seismically active areas is much more stringent. Also, if you look at the way we build our containment vessels, our containment facilities, we have much higher standards. What we had in Japan would never have happened at Comanche Peak, for instance.
Mm-hmm. And also the South Texas project, I guess down near Houston, probably falls within that same category as far as the stringent regulations.
Correct. And there are different fail-safe mechanisms so that if you begin to have a reactor that's going to run out of control, rather than having you have an automatic shutdown method where you're not waiting on electricity to come back on from your diesel pumps and so forth.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. Of course, yesterday, again, a short-term continuing resolution pushed us a little bit farther down to where early in April, April 8th or something like that now, where the government would shut down. This is something you voted for?
I did vote for this. I didn't like voting for it. My goal would be to pass a continue resolution with deep cuts that gets us through September the 30th, and so we can move on to what we're going to do to reshape the way the federal government spends money for the long term. But unfortunately, the Senate has not been engaged very well just yet, and so we have to we've had this one more temporary extension to keep the doors of the government open.
Now, there seems to have been a fracture in that leadership maybe wasn't able to hold the Republican bloc together. You went ahead and voted along with the Republican leadership, but there were many Republicans who decided they didn't want to pass this one more short term.
That's correct, and while I respect what they did, there were a couple of things that influenced my vote. to vote for it. And by the way, just as an aside, 66 of the 87 Republican freshmen voted for this. So 75% of the new group of people that was brought in by grassroots efforts and by the Tea Party movement did vote in favor of this bill. So I feel like I'm in good company there. But the three things that caused me to vote for it were, number one, is anytime you can vote to cut spending, you need to vote to cut spending. The second thing is, the last thing I wanted to do was vote with Nancy Pelosi, and she voted on the opposite side of me on this deal. And the third thing is what we've already talked about to some extent, and that is we don't want to add the specter of a government shutdown to disrupt the capital markets. At the same time, we've got Japan out there that's having issues and may want to start selling their treasury security. So I just felt like that was a really bad combination at a time we don't need further disruptions to our economy.
We're a week farther down the road as far as gas prices continuing to be high. Some news on that front for our listeners?
Well, the Natural Resources Committee, of which I'm a member, is going to have several witnesses today to talk about Obama's drilling moratorium. And we're fortunate to have a Texas witness, and that's going to be Railroad Commissioner Elizabeth Ames Jones is going to be there. And I've got a couple of questions for her, so she can help explain to the nation what the real-world impact on Texas of what the president is doing. And by the way, I introduced legislation last week to add a year to the leases that have been adversely impacted by a drilling moratorium. And I've got another bill that we'll introduce today, and I'm sure we'll have a chance to talk about it next week.
We had talked about last week also the fact that people would like to have relief immediately, if at all possible, and obviously lifting a moratorium would help in the long run, but not today. What would you say to those people who think this is a good time to suspend the 18-cent-a-gallon federal tax?
You know, I haven't thought about it, but it seems like a perfectly plausible solution to me. We have to be careful now, because remember, those taxes are not used for general government revenues. Those are used to build our highways.
Right.
So if it makes sense, I think, on the economic front to suspend it, but we need to make sure we don't endanger our highway trust fund, too.
Bill Flores joining us from D.C. Finally today, The Hill has a story this morning about how the Obama administration is kind of looking at the idea of possibly cutting future benefits in some way, according to certain groups of wage earners, for Social Security. And again, they're split on it, the leadership within the White House. What's your thought on the idea that the White House might be taking a stand on future changes for those wage earners and Social Security on down the road?
Well, first of all, anything the White House puts out, you have to look at it very closely to see if there is some other direction that they're trying to go other than what the headline says. So I haven't read that article, and I can't comment on it directly. I will tell you this. If we want to ensure the safety and soundness and security of Social Security for all generations, not only the people that are beneficiaries of it today, but those that are just being born, we have to make some dramatic changes to it. Any change that we make will not impact people that are close to retirement or that are currently using Social Security today. We've got those folks will be protected, but I need to make sure that those people, whether they're 10, 20, 30, or 40, also have a secure Social Security system. So we have to make changes.
One more question popped into my head here on the international scene. There's still debate over a no-fly zone over Libya. Now, it seems like Gaddafi has gained some strength in the last week. What's your view on a no-fly zone?
It seems to me like if we were going to do it, we should have done it early on. I listened to what Secretary Gates has said, and Secretary Gates didn't sound like he thought it was a great idea. And so I would take the lead from him, and if he says he doesn't think it's a great idea, well, I would say it's probably not either. That said, if we were going to do it, we should have done it well before Gaddafi began to regain strength.
Congressman Bill Flores joins us most every Wednesday. You can hear the entire interview archived on our website at WTAW.com. Thanks for the time, Bill.
Great to be on WTAW with you again, Scott.
All right, thanks a lot. Have a good day.
Uh-huh, you too.